But man, it doesn't matter. You connect with an influencer who's got 40 million followers, whatever. Still, they can like it, but everyone has their own opinion and their own tastes. And that's not going to convince someone to buy your book. You convince someone to buy your book.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am, as always, Nikki P. My guest here today is Aaron Ryan. Aaron, why don't you give an introduction to what you do and how you found your way here?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm an avid enthusiast for getting in as many places as I can to talk about the story that I was given. So I am, I've got a kind of a dual career going on. I'm a voiceover artist, so I tell other people's stories, but I'm also an author, so I tell my own stories. And so I wrote a best-selling sci-fi alien invasion book that ballooned into a trilogy that ballooned into a hexalogy. So the trilogy plus two prequels, those are all out right now. And I'm working on a sequel, which makes it five books is a pentalogy. I'm actually making it a hexalogy of six books. It's the best thing I've ever written. I'm super grateful for the heart and the thematic depth that's inherent in it. And just love to talk to people, especially those who are self-published authors, because there's a big specter about getting yourself out there, doing the marketing. Why don't I just choose a traditional publisher? What's the deal with agents? All that stuff. So I enjoy talking about my books and theirs.
So what is your publishing? Are you self-published? Do you have an agent? Is there a combination of those two things that actually works?
I don't know about a combination, man. It's hard. As a voiceover artist, I've got six different agents. So, I mean, I enjoy that side of it. But getting a literary agent is very difficult. Your material has to be saleable from them to a publisher. They have a vested interest in that and seeing those, you know, the book. So I prefer, honestly, always, and this is the way I've done every single book that I put out there, and I'm working on my 19th and 20th books, I prefer to be self-published for a number of reasons. One, you retain all creative control. For people who like to have their hands in the pots and all the cookie jars, that's very appealing. Two, you command a higher royalty. You'll always be able to do that. Three, much faster time to market. Trad pubs are going to take a long time to get your stuff out there. You can choose your own team of editors, graphic designers, beta readers, alpha readers. I just prefer self-publishing so much that I actually wrote a book on self-publishing and marketing, and I self-published it.
Well, you come out, I can't, you need a title. I'm going to have a look at it myself. So what's that one called?
It's a very long title, so I actually have to reference the title. I wanted to make it very SEO optimized, so I'll take a big breath. How to Successfully Self-Publish and Promote Your Independent Book, A Self-Publishing and Business Marketing Guide for the Independent Author. There you go.
Nice. And watch, another 3 years and ain't even going to matter because SEO is going down the tubes.
Yeah, I know. But the book doesn't focus strictly online stuff. I do so many craft fairs, vendor markets, trade shows. And that's where you make your money. That's where you sell your books. So that's mentioned in this book. If you want to market it correctly, do it offline. Market the snot out of it. Get out there with people.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I've talked to people that like they'll take their science fiction novel out and bring it to farmers markets and things like that. Anywhere that they can get it in front of people, strike up that conversation and say, "Here's what it is. Here's what it's about." You never know when you're going to come across someone that's going to. You're going to vibe with, and it's going to make sense. One of the biggest things I tell everyone, it's all about relationships. Marketing is relationship building, and the better you are at that, you know, the better of a time you're going to have getting rid of your book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Starbucks doesn't sell coffee. Starbucks sells relationships. And I was given the best advice, and I feel bad because I can't remember who said it, but it is an author. And she said, if you want to know how to be an excellent marketer, stop marketing. Don't market to people. Be an enthusiast with people. The difference is absolutely night and day. People love to buy. They hate to be sold. You know, you're twisting my arm. That doesn't make for a good relationship with a potential buyer or reader.
It's funny you say that, actually, because like anyone will tell you, part of my personality is like I'm a fan always. Like, the whole reason I got into the try to get into the niche of marketing I got into is because I just want more books I want to read. Like, I want to help people make books that are going to make me happy to read. You know, when I was in bands, I was always the guy that was like, there's local bands that I'd still geek out about if I ran into today. Like, I love being a fan of the material. And so wanting to go and talk about it and be excited about it, for me, is second nature. And I think that it was certainly with a lot of authors, the ability to go out there and be excited and just talk about your thing. Like, they feel guilty about doing it, but it's kind of what you have to do. It's part of the game. It's part of the system. And if you can't manage that enthusiasm for your product, nobody else certainly is.
Nobody else will. It's for that very same reason, as a voiceover artist, I narrated all of my audiobooks. I hate narrating audiobooks. I don't do them for clients because they take forever and they pay way too little. But no one else is going to, when you hear the narration of the story, no one else is going to evoke such emotion. No one else is going to be as attached to the story or the characters. So that's my enthusiasm for this story shining through in those recordings. I'd be seriously remiss if I outsourced that recording to anybody else. By the same stretch, getting out there and just telling people about this story that so compelled you and captivated you, and you want them to partake of it as well. That's just being enthusiastic, not a marketer.
No, absolutely. And it's funny you mention that, because I personally, like, it's way harder to get me to listen to an audiobook. Most of my book reading is audiobook consumption, just because I spend a lot of time driving, doing other things, where the only way I can get them in, if I want to get them in, is to listen to them. And I prefer the author read it. I don't care if they're not a professional audiobook. There's an understanding of the character that I think is really hard to get. And you can always tell if you're listening to audiobooks. I mean, I guess partly because I'm an audio engineer, I can hear the punch-ins when the voice changes. And it always happens to be at some really emotive moment when they change it, because they didn't quite get it right the first time and probably didn't get it just right the last time, but they couldn't have any more takes on it.
Yeah, it's, what is that phrase? People don't care what you know until they know that you care. So, you know, I've done a horde of research for every single one of the novels in my series, particularly volume 3. And so I know, air quotes, a lot now more about, I said that wrong. I know a lot more now about military and tech, you know, equipment and procedures and protocols and all of that that I didn't know before. People don't care about that until they know that I care about the story. Again, it just brings you back to the enthusiastic nature of what you wrote, sharing it enthusiastically.
So you don't record, don't do audio recording for other people. You do it for yourself. Now, is that because of the business changing a little bit, or is, how does this whole thing work out? It's interesting that you would classify yourself as both the, you know, the creator and the reader.
Yeah. Well, voiceovers, so they're kind of parallel tracks. Again, voiceovers, I'm telling other people's stories. That's my studio behind me. And for an author, I get to tell my own, which is just so much more preferred. But audiobooks, they pay a pittance. They take, you know, if you're recording an hour, it's going to take you 2 hours to record, edit, produce, and maybe even more that single hour. But you're only paid per finished hour unless you go on a royalty share program. I don't prefer the royalty share, because that's like, if your book sells, then I'm going to get paid. I don't like that, unless you're a Stephen King or a Suzanne Collins or, you know, an Isaac Asimov or Tolkien.
Well, you know the math.
Yeah, it's hard to compute that. It's a lot of hours invested per book. I don't like doing them for that reason. I do commercial and e-learning narration, which pays a lot more. But with my own books, I was not going to let anybody sink their teeth into those, because they wouldn't sink their teeth in the same way I would. They wouldn't bring it to life.
Since it feels like a natural kind of place, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your books and this grand series that you have developing?
Yeah, I'd love to, and I'll be enthusiastic about it. So I wrote a series that started with a single novel. It's called Dissonance Volume 1 Reality, and it takes place in 2042, 16 years after an alien invasion wiped out 85% of mankind in 2026. hundreds of thousands of things drifted out of the sky, June 6, 26, and they hovered there 50 feet above the ground in a geostationary orbit all over the planet, you know, over 500,000 of them. And they wait there for 90 days. They're not attacking. They haven't killed us. So we're thinking maybe they're angelic messengers. We find out we were wrong. They wake up all at the same time 3 months later. They hunt us down. We call them Gorgons because, like Medusa the Gorgon, you cannot under any circumstances lock eyes with them. They have a telepathic paralytic, so they're going to freeze you where you stand. They're going to eat you at their leisure, and you're going to feel every agonizing bite.
Ugh, it's gruesome.
Yeah, it's gruesome. You just don't take pictures of aliens. You run. I don't know why we don't run. So it's told from the perspective of a 23-year-old Army sergeant named Cameron Shipley and his 19-year-old brother, Ruddy. They are performing daily recon every day for food, ammo, and survivors. They find out that something big is going on. They're not being told what it is. Leads up to a massive counterstrike in 2042, where we finally kick the aliens off the planet. Yay, good news, happy ending, spoiler. But then I went back and wrote a prequel before the invasion, and then during and after, and then another prequel. So it's now 5 books. It just keeps telling itself. It's loaded with thematic depth and heart. And I'm just so proud to be the one who got to write this series. It's way better than anything I've ever written.
I'll ask, is there some type of like a spiritual level for you on that? Like, do you feel like God has sent you the story to tell it, or you more of a generic, you know, kind of just something told me to tell a story?
No, I do. I mean, it incorporates so many elements of things that terrified me as a child. It's not a referendum on politics or how we're living today, although some of that is present in there and inherent in the story. But I do feel that this was my calling to tell this story. And just like George Lucas, you know, was like, man, I got to tell Star Wars. What an honor. It's a really, really good story. So much so that the first volume has been adapted for the screen and is being pitched right now to major streaming networks. So I'm stoked beyond belief. That's an author's greatest dream.
It's a lot more money you need to get in that world.
But also, like, man, I just want to tell the story and have people hear it and receive it and experience it. What a great way to just disseminate that to the masses.
I mean, I will have to ask the operative question. Do you have any concerns that this is the time period in which that book is going to Hollywood, given how they like to take their liberties with certain properties these days?
The Hobbit.
amongst others.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about that. My screenwriter was exceptionally collaborative. I'm actually 3 degrees away from James Cameron using him. He's amazing. So he was exceptionally collaborative. So it's very true to the source material. The stipulation we would make in any contract were the rights to the screenplay bought or optioned. The stipulation we would put in there is that we get to serve both in the screenwriting as consultants and on set as consultants. And oftentimes that's the case. The writers are used that way.
Yeah, it seems like it should be pretty normal.
Yeah. So we would have a say.
I mean, until you want to drill your own teeth afterwards.
Exactly. Well, we would have a say. We would be on site saying, hey, let's keep this true to the original material.
For me, a big thing about any type of book is the characters. Are these two brothers, are they kind of like the core of the story? Is there like more of an ensemble thing that happens as it builds? Or does it kind of feel like a cadre around them, but they're like a center?
Yes, and. So Cameron and his younger brother, Ruddy, serve at a blockade in Clarksville, Tennessee. And as they go along, they are joined by members of other blockades, one in particular in Alpharetta. Keep in mind that 85% of mankind has been wiped off the map. The rest are living all underground in bunkers called blockades with gun towers overhead, like a halo of gun towers. But other people from other critical players, key players in the story are introduced as you go along. You find that the chief antagonist, again, is always man. It's sad, but like the worst enemy of man is always man. So you find that out again as you go along. And the aliens, the Gorgons, aren't reduced to a nuisance status, but they start fighting a war on two different fronts. And that's where things get a little tense and rough.
Now, obviously, you've been involved with this property. You have written quite a bit. How long has it taken you to get to this point in the story?
On the fifth book, you mean? Working on the sixth? So this is where people drop their jaw and question. And I totally welcome that. I absolutely expect it. I started writing Dissonance Volume 1 Reality November 21st last year. Published it January 1st. All along, I've been writing the other ones while there's an overlap of editing and publishing the successive novels. But Volume 2 published March 20th. Volume 3 published May 18th. Volume 0, the prequel, published June 6th.
Well, no wonder you think there's something like ethereal about this system. If you can write that much that quickly, good Lord.
Well, AI, or I mean, voiceover is actually the career has taken a hit because of AI. So that's what's driven me to writing. And the voiceover career, the industry is crumbling. So that's the impetus that's pushed me into writing again and writing fiction. But because of that, jobs are down. Auditions are down. I've had all kinds of time to write, but the speed at which I've churned everything out has made it a little suspect, and I understand that. People have gone, oh, you used AI to write these stories. No, I haven't. I've been churning them out day after day, hammering away at my keyboard in between auditions and jobs and at night. And the story, a good story, tells itself. So it's burst out of me kind of like an alien queen. I couldn't contain it.
Well, the reason I actually bring up that question is because the next question I have is, it's like, you're not... I can see there's the photo behind you. So I'm assuming that you're not just a bachelor. All you do is write books. So this is going to make this even more ridiculous when you say it. But what's the life-work balance like for you?
It's a struggle. The struggle is real. You have to maintain it. I treat my authoring, as I do my voiceovers, as a business. My business starts at 9 a.m. It concludes at 5 p.m. I have a wife who I love, and I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old son who I love. And so they are my life and my world. My kids come back around 3 o'clock from the bus. So I do take a pause and go get them from the bus stop, bring them back home, and then resume until 5. You have to balance that. They're both gone during the day now because of our youngest one is now in kindergarten. So we're kind of empty nesters. But it gives my wife and I a chance to connect and exercise and eat out and spend more time together. That's balance as well.
So your big thing you've been talking about so far is enthusiasm. And if it wasn't obvious to anyone, obviously you are a very enthusiastic guy. How do you maintain that enthusiasm? But the bottom line is that this is a hard world, certainly as an independent author, and you take a lot of knocks. So how do you maintain the enthusiasm through all of that?
That's a great question. You have to maintain a certain unflappability, especially in this career. The same was true of voiceovers. You get rejected, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're auditioning for these jobs. And it's more, you're facing the rejection there as well. I was given a phrase by an agent, entrepreneur friend a few years ago that I put on a plaque, but it's really hard to see because it's acrylic and it's see-through and you won't be able to see. But the thing that she said to me, I had to ask her to repeat it because it was so monumental. She said, someone's endorsement of you or lack thereof has very little to do with your trajectory. And I listened to her say that and, well, say that again? She repeated it for me. Someone's positive review of your book, negative review of your book, someone's purchase of your book or lack thereof, an agent signing you or not, getting a traditional publisher or not, any of that has very little to do with your trajectory. You have to have such whole integrity that you'll continue to write on and march on and market on despite your book selling. Enough period spent greasing that wheel, I believe the universe, you know, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, returns that in favor to you and rewards you for the time invested in your passion and your dreams.
There's an entire industry of people called influencers out there who would love to argue, and a lot of companies really hoping that everything you just said is completely wrong.
You mean the AI makers?
Well, there's that, some of that too.
Oh, I see what you mean. The marketing companies and those that want you to use them to promote your book and all that stuff, right?
Well, just the idea of the influencer, the whole point is somebody slapping the thumbs up on a product is good enough to sell anything. And One of the things I've been claiming for years, and I'm loving watching it come true. That's why if you go to my website, I classify myself as a post-corporate marketer. Nobody cares. Nobody likes companies anymore. Being a person, an entity, a not authoritative, but a authentic person that people can trust and rely on, that is worth way, way more in today's industry than, you know, I'm going to be honest, I haven't listened to anything Stephen King tells me to write in about 20 years because Twitter was invented and I realized he's an idiot.
I get that. I have tried influencers. I have tried different marketing companies. I've tried Amazon ads, Facebook ads, TikTok ads, Instagram ads. I have put my money in. You would be blown away if you knew the dollar figure that I've invested in this series just this year.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. As a marketer, I know what you can spend.
It's an expense, but it's an investment, right? Because you believe in it. It's your dream. But man, it doesn't matter. You connect with an influencer who's got 40 million followers, whatever. Still, they can like it, but everyone has their own opinion and their own tastes. And that's not going to convince someone to buy your book. You convince someone to buy your book through an excellent cover. People still judge the book by the cover. An excellent, captivating description. A title that makes them go, huh? Everything you do should be things that make people go, huh? You know, and want to know more. You're the best person to do that.
Well, it's about understanding where the value lies. The value in an influencer is putting your book in front of people. But that's all there is. They don't convince anyone to buy it. That's entirely, like you said, it's you. It's the cover. It's the blurb about it. It's everything else about it. Like, believe it or not, people really only want to do what they want to do. And so getting them to do other things is pretty difficult. As much as like they want you to believe it is just as simple as having someone tell you to do it. It's not.
It's leading a horse to water, man.
It takes a lot of touch points. It takes a lot of being in the ether. And so there is, you know, the value that you get. It's just more people having a chance to see you. But that also means you're in a diluted pool. You know, somebody sees you once, it means nothing. I always get frustrated. Like I said, if I go on a podcast and like the guy only mentions like, oh, hey, I'll be on talking to so-and-so this Friday. And that one tweet is all they ever say about it. It's like, well, most of your audience never even saw that because that's not how social media even works. Like if you don't post it 10 times, no one knows it's happening. So thanks for not valuing my time.
Yeah. Or my money. And the problem is there's so many people out there. The authoring industry is rife with scammers. People are now the scammers and you know, they're largely all from Nigeria. You can see right from their name. I'm not being racist or countryist. It's just kind of, that's the way it is. However, when you have scammers that are now impersonating authors, decent, hardworking, legitimate authors, they're trying to get in the good graces of a naive author to go, wow, Stephen King wants to talk to me? You know, and then blah, blah, blah. They're impersonating authors for that reason, to get in and extract the money and then try to get you to buy some marketing package that is anything but. I admin a 32,000 member author group on Facebook called Authors and Writers Only. And I help co-admin two other groups as well. We're constantly purging scammers and banning scammers and warning readers, if you've seen this post or this person, avoid. Don't talk to them. Don't DM them. Just run away. Run, Forrest, run.
Well, that's what sucks about that is because they can make those up as quickly as you can to let anybody know about them too. Unfortunately, they're probably running with 10 at a time. And yeah. If any marketer tells you that they're going to make your dreams come true and it's going to happen overnight, they're lying or they're a scammer. Because any real marketer will tell you that it's a long term, it's a long game. Like you start building things now that won't even take effect for 6 months to a year. Like, you know about building SEO, just Google finding a place to position you would take at least 6 months. And then you got to start tweaking a little bit here, a little bit there to get that a better thing. It's nothing happens quickly. And it's how those scammers can get in there is because they can pretend that they can do something quick that any real marketer will tell you, no, that's not possible.
It's over-promising and under-delivering. Yeah, it's snake oil salesmen, all of them. It's just basically promising you the world for a minimal investment. But all those minimal investments sure add up to them and provide food on their table at your expense. It's really poor investment.
And this is, you keep mentioning like expenses versus investments. What are some things that you perceive as being good investments?
Yeah. So Amazon ads, if they're calibrated right, people are looking on Amazon night and day for good books, and you want to find them with good sponsored ads. It's just that simple. Facebook and TikTok ads are harder, and the metrics are harder to identify if this sale did come from Facebook or TikTok or any of those. But honestly, where I've made my real money, and honestly, you sell your book on Amazon for a Kindle price at $2.99, you're going to make $1.05. You sell a paperback, you're going to make $3. Sell them in person. Make a minimal investment. There's the word again. To appear at a local craft fair. Don't do book fairs. You are lost in a sea of authors all clamoring for the attention of readers, and you're not unique in any respect when you do a book fair. So do a craft fair and highlight the books that you've sold, invest in some banners, backdrops, good stuff to have at your table, stands for your books. Man, I just made $1,300 at a craft fair. I think it was the end of August, right before a Labor Day trip that I took. I made $1,300 and sold 100 books through a 3-day event. And it was just, man, every single opportunity to tell people about the story. So you're selling the books is one thing. You're telling people who will, that'll stay in their brain and they'll tell other people. Word spreads that way. It's such a good use of your money and your time.
So I want to ask a question from your perspective about book fairs. Book fairs always seem interesting and kind of suspect to me in the first place, because it always just seems like a whole lot of writers at book fairs. Like it's just it ends up being more a place that they can hang out and talk to each other. And maybe, and that feels like it might be better done at a bar as opposed to like just at a ballroom in some hotel that you paid way too much for.
No, you're there to sell books. You're there to sell books and tell people about the story that you care so much about. So authors are not your target market. That's another thing in the author groups online, people posting all the time their wares, their story ads that they've created for their books. But you're marketing to authors. You want to find readers and market to them. So no, I don't recommend book fairs for that, because it's so hard to stand out. What I love about craft fairs is you got a person selling leather wallets over there. You got a person selling glass-blown sculptures over here. You got someone, a tattoo or a face artist over there. And you've got whatever over here. But you are an author with these beautiful books. I can't wait for the holiday season, because now I'm holding up my complete box set of the original trilogy and prequel. I can't wait to sell these at holiday craft fairs and know that people are going to wrap these up for their loved ones. Oh man, that gets me excited.
I love being able to be excited. I guess we're kind of to the point, man. It happened so fast because you are so damn pumped. If you had to leave the audience with like one big piece of advice, what would that be? The thing that you think, maybe it's your guiding principle, or the thing that, like, if it wasn't for this one thing, none of this would be possible.
You just said it, actually. That's exactly what I was going to say. So I'm a sci-fi geek. I don't know if you couldn't tell. I love Star Wars, but I have a mantra here that is my mantra that's really helped in business and life. And it comes from a movie I like to pretend does not exist, The Phantom Menace. Okay, we're going to disagree. I know. But I love this so much, I had it made into a plaque. And this is... Qui-Gon Jinn said this to a young Anakin Skywalker: your focus determines your reality. My focus a while back was to become a successful voiceover artist and pay for our mortgage and put our kids through school. That's reality. I'm the voice of United Healthcare. So any commercials that you see or hear, that's me. That pays our mortgage and everything else. That focus became reality. My focus now, in light of the fact that voiceovers is a crumbling industry, is to become a best-selling author, check. All my books have been bestsellers. And to have it on screen and have that pay our mortgage and put our kids through school. That's my focus. That's going to become my reality. So adopt a mantra is what I would tell people out there. Your focus determines your reality.
Wow. Well, I can't think of anything I'd actually agree with more. It's an absolutely a good way. You can call it the secret, call it the reticular activation system. Where your attention goes is what happens. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where can we send people to learn more about you and your books?
My favorite question. So they can go to either one of two sites. One is authoraaronryan.com. Two A's in Aaron, authoraaronryan.com. It's all my books are there. Or they could go to dissonancetheseries.com, but dissonance is a hard word. People misspell it. They think it's dissidence. No, go to getthesebooks.com, and getthesebooks.com will forward you to the alien invasion sci-fi website, dissonancetheseries.com.
You're a marketer at heart, whether or not you believe it, because that is a great URL.
It's all over my vinyl. We got vinyl lettering on our rear windows of our vehicles that say that, you know, visit getthesebooks.com.
Absolutely, man. Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.